I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice here in the America Out Loud Radio Network. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and today we got some interesting conversations for the new year. You know, last year we talked a lot about politics, and believe me, there's a lot of politics to talk about. What we're seeing recently has been completely out of control, so we are going to cover some of that stuff. But I think today we're going to have a little bit of a conversation with the fellas in the neighborhood in the next couple segments. We're going to be talking about good and evil. Is there good and evil? I think if we look around our country, we look at the way we're split right now, we look at the way the world is evolving around us, we can see that good and evil is not only something conceptually, we can see it right in front of our faces. Now, I think this is a topic that has come up for as long as there's been mankind. I mean, we looked at, they say that history begins from the day you're born, and if you don't have a perspective of anything that came before you, you're going to have a bigger problem understanding the bigger world. Part of justice is understanding how people should relate to each other, what they do with each other. Do they treat each other with respect? Do they treat each other cruelly? And we have seen the entire gamut of all of these things among our brothers and sisters across the planet forever. You know, I go back to a time shortly before my birth. I go back to the 1940s. And we think of the horrors of World War II, the horrific acts that were taken by certain countries and how they did the most cruel and horrible things to people in the course of that war. It's almost unbelievable when you study it. You know, the Bataan Death March and what they did to those soldiers, airmen, seamen, whoever they had captured from our country, and how they marched them to death. We think about what happened to the Jewish population under the Nazis and how they were decimated and how they were treated in the Holocaust and what pain that has brought to the entire world. Two examples, I think, of real evil in our time. It's one thing to have a conflict, even to the point of war. There are things worth fighting for that you believe in, you know, and we look at that. We'll use that conflict as an example. You know, World War II, you had the Nazis moving to take over all of Europe and then eventually conquer the world. The Third Reich was to be lasting for 1,000 years under the power of Hitler and his regime. And it was evil, the things that they did. They did not concern themselves with the feelings of people, the emotions, the physical pain of anyone. And they absolutely decimated entire communities. And we look at those films now from World War II, you know, especially when you see the concentration camps and you see the battlefield footage and you realize those were real people. I mean, they're black and white images for most of us. But they're real people, and that evil really took place. You can go back as far as, you know, the Roman Empire and what the Romans did to people that they conquered. Now, we can argue the points that once they conquered you, if you submitted, you were then part of the empire, and maybe you were treated better. I'm not going to get into all of that right now. My point, though, is good and evil goes back to the very birth of humanity. If we take it from a biblical perspective, the first man and woman were placed in the Garden of Eden, and they had everything perfect, and it was all good. Everything was good. And they were almost immediately conflicted with evil. They had to make a choice. And we know the choice they made. The human choice was to choose what was easy, what was convenient, what was against the rules. Basically, they chose evil. And that is where, you know, the book of Genesis starts out and tells us how it all got going. You can even go before that. Here you had God. You know, God, everything is good with God. And he has these angels and everything. And then you have an angel and other, you know, fallen angels that decide they're better than God. So the essence of I'm going to say life, because amoeba don't have good and evil, I don't think. I don't think lions have good and evil. They have survival. What might look like evil to us when they catch a water buffalo and tear it apart is just part of living. There's no evil intent there. I think evil intent comes with sentience and intelligence and free will and the ability to think. So without getting into a whole religious thing here, I'm going to do that, but I think you can't ignore the teachings of religion and how they've meant a lot to us as humans if you're going to talk about good and evil. So today, we're going to have the fellas on in the neighborhood later on, and we're going to talk about good and evil. Is it innately human? Is it innately something that we choose, or is it something that is just part of us? Is it something that if we all were put in certain positions, would we choose evil or would we be evil? So we're going to talk about that today. I'm also going to tell you that on the website, the AmericaOutloud.com website, under the bloggers posts, if you look up Chasing Justice, you're going to see a guest blog from my 15-year-old son, Jack. Now you'd say, well, you know, why would you put a 15-year-old kid's blog on? Well, like I said, he's a guest blogger because he's been on this radio show in the past. Him and his friends were on The Fam a couple weeks ago. I got a lot of emails and calls from people who really liked The Fam, thought they were interesting young men, and they really are. They're good, decent young men. Well, we were talking about this. This conversation comes up of good and evil, happiness and contentment. You know, these we try and have some deeper conversations here at Lieutenant Joe's house other than just, you know, is it going to snow out? Is it going to rain? You know, when do we have the cocktails? We're trying to be bigger thinkers. We're trying to find our place in the world. We're trying to understand truth and justice. And that's really the whole essence of what we do here. So I'm trying to share that with all of you. So my son, Jack, who is a very, very smart young man. I mean, he really is. He surprises us all the time with his ability and his compassion to think and do the right things. But I'm going to share his essay he wrote on the veil of civility, and it's really about good and evil. And when I read it, I was moved. I was enlightened. I was amazed that a 15-year-old kid could have those kind of thoughts. But then again, like I said, we talk about this kind of stuff around my house here. We sit and we try and have conversations because we're all trying to figure out who we are and where do we fit in. So I put Jack's blog as a guest blogger under the Chasing Justice banner. So go there and read it on AmericaOutloud.com. You can also read other people's blogs on there. There's some amazing writers. This station is very lucky to have such talented people. So take some time and you know, go through there. Reading is a lot of fun. So anyway, that's what we're going to talk about. Good and evil with the fellas in the neighborhood. You know, in segment three today, we just got through New Year's. And we see what's going on in the world. So we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, the changes that are coming to our country. But one of the topics that came up was police enforcement of law and rules, justice-related items. Motor vehicle enforcement came up. Now, the fellas in the neighborhood had interesting points of view, especially Jim the Contrarian. Jim is a very good and decent man. He's very law-abiding, no matter what he sounds like on the air. He's always respectful to the police. But he does represent a large part of our population that is sick of the millions and millions of rules we have for everything that we do. Now, motor vehicle serves an important role in our society. Motor vehicle enforcement by our law enforcement people. Driving cars is inherently dangerous, and we know people die every single day in car accidents. We know people who don't die but are seriously injured. And usually it's the fault of weather combined with human error, combined with recklessness and carelessness. So enforcing motor vehicle laws is extremely important. As a cop, I did it myself for years. What I can tell you, though, is that there are times and places that motor vehicle enforcement is used as a revenue grower for communities. To deny that would be intellectually dishonest. Now, hardly anybody will ever say that, but I think most people know that, you know, some of the rules we have out there, while they're made to keep us safe, you know, issuing tickets is a way for some communities to raise money. I find that, in and of itself, an injustice. If the purpose of enforcing motor vehicle law is to make people safe and drive safe and to remind them, gee, the last time I drove like an idiot and I was dangerous to everyone, I got stopped and I got a $300 ticket, so I don't want to do that again. That's negative reinforcement. And in reality, that works on human beings. You know, you don't want to get the sting of that $300 careless driving or reckless driving ticket, lose your license, and complicate your life terribly. You'll drive more appropriately. Now, for somebody like me, I usually drive appropriately. I just do. I don't want to get hurt. I don't want to hurt nobody else. But we've all seen people out there that drive like crazy people. They endanger us and our family. So we're going to have a conversation with the fellas about enforcing societal rules. Is that good? Is that bad? Is that appropriate? Has it gone too far? And I think you'll enjoy some of the conversation with the guys there. So now we're going to turn a little bit of attention to this political situation, this mess that's going on. We are in the longest government shutdown on record. We have 800,000 federal workers who are not getting paychecks. We have a stalemate between the White House and the Congress, especially the Democrat-controlled House of Representatives under Nancy Pelosi. There is an absolute deadlock. President Bush wants $5 billion for the wall so that he can secure our country and our borders. And Mrs. Pelosi doesn't want to give him a dime because she does not want to give him a win. She doesn't want him to be able to fulfill a campaign promise. Now, let's look at that argument. Let's be fair about it. If she honestly believes that his point of view, that building a wall is not going to solve any problems. It is simply a campaign promise that he made, and he wants to spend $5 billion to fulfill that campaign promise, and she just really sees it has no value whatsoever, and she's thinking about you, the American people, and saying there are better things we can do with that $5 billion to keep you safe and to secure our borders. And that's why, in principle, she's against the wall. Well, if I thought that was the case, and that was what she honestly believed, and the other, our other friends in the Democratic Party over there, who were refusing to give on this, I would have to say that I would disagree, but I would respect her and her opinion and standing on her principle. Unfortunately, I don't believe that for one second. It is pretty clear to me that this is a game. How many times have I said this here on Chasing Justice? We are all being played. We're being played by both parties in our government. You know, they get themselves entrenched into the government. They get these great lifestyles going. They end up all coming out millionaires, or at least the huge majority of them come out multimillionaires. And in the meantime, does our life get any better? I mean, not that government should control whether our life is good or not. It shouldn't. But government is supposed to do certain things to help us make our lives better. The untold numbers of regulation that is constantly poured on top of people is just unbelievable. That doesn't make your life better. You know, try opening a business. See what happens opening a business and how many restrictions and penalties and forms you got to fill out, things you got to go through. It costs you untold amounts of money before you can even open your door and sell your first hamburger. It's almost impossible. Now, some of those regulations are there for safety, to make sure the people who have the restaurant don't poison you. Those are okay. But the reams and reams of stuff in our country is amazing, and our politicians don't do anything really to help us. They go slow. They take their time. They kick the can down the road. And they never really serve us. They serve themselves under the guise of serving us. And they say all the nice things we want to hear every election, and we pull the lever for them. And then they go back and do the same nothing again. So we're looking at this stalemate, the wall. Like I said, if I thought Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats were sincere, I would support the fact that that's their belief. I disagree, but I'd support it and say, okay, well, that's their belief. I don't believe that for one second. I don't think you believe it either. The reality is we're only talking $5 billion. Now, that's a lot of money, but not for a government with a $4 trillion budget. $5 billion is 1/10 of 1% of the money that we're looking for, that the president, who is the one person in our country who's elected, and he is charged with keeping the country safe. In his judgment, he has decided that he thinks a wall is going to be helpful. So guess what? If that's what the guy in charge thinks he needs, then the Congress should provide the funding for it. They should talk about it. They should debate it. They should go through all that. Of course, there are representatives. Make sure it's not something we don't need. But I think to look at the facts at hand, the untold amount of drugs coming across, the human trafficking, I could go on and on with the list. We all know what's really going on. So for our Democrat friends to sit there and go, well, none of that's real. None of that's real. That's all made up because he just wants this thing because it's a temper tantrum. All this other nonsense. This is about saving the lives of people. I was shocked this past week when I saw a group of angel moms and families show up at Nancy Pelosi's office and they were ushered out. These are people that lost people to illegal aliens that have come over and killed them. Now, not every alien, illegal alien or otherwise, is a murderer or a rapist. No, they're not. The majority of them, we said all the time, are people who just want a better life, and we can understand that. But you have to follow rules. That's part of being here. Following the rules makes it orderly for everyone. But there are lots of people who come here and do bad things to people. And for these families, these angel families, to show up at Nancy Pelosi's office and she turns them away is utterly disgraceful. All she had to do was come out and say hello to them, tell them how much that she's sorry that they lost their family members, and that she wants to do what she wants to do for border security and to protect people. And that would have been the appropriate response. But to turn them away, to ignore them, because that might give some leverage to the side that wants to build the wall. We're in a bad way, ladies and gentlemen. We are in a bad way. And I haven't even begun to mention the nonsense that has now come out about the investigation against the president and what's happening to the president. Now we find out, and I don't want to diverge, but we're coming to the end of the segment. We find out that the Justice Department and the FBI and everybody knew that that dossier was fake, and they went with it anyway. So my brother and sister law enforcement officers out there, if you're applying for a search warrant and you know your information is not correct, you're going to go in front of the judge, raise your hand, and swear that everything in that affidavit is true to the best of your knowledge? Now, it's one thing to go in thinking, hey, I really believe this information because you investigated it, but it's another to know that it's sketchy information, that it's not good, it's not corroborated, and to swear that it's the right thing. That, my friends, is not justice. That is an injustice that happened to every single one of us. Another one of the games that were played against us in this last election. So those are the kind of things we're going to talk about. I want you to go to AmericaOutLoud.com, look up the bloggers, find Lieutenant Joe, Chasing Justice, and I want you to read Jack's essay. It's amazing what a 15-year-old kid can see, and it gives me hope that him and the fam kind of kids are the kids that may take over in the future. So join us back here in a couple minutes, Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutLoud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Well, here I have the gents from the neighborhood here again. We have the man of faith, Bill Dallas. Bill, how are you?
I'm doing great, Joe. How are you doing?
Very good. We have Jim, the contrarian, Giordano. How are you, Jim?
Very well, Joe. Thank you.
That's very nice. You look good, all tanned up. Looks like you were in Florida.
Yes, I was.
Yes, he was. And we have Jack, rock and roll race car Patterson. Jack, how are you tonight?
Doing good, Joe. Great to be here.
That's fantastic. You know, we had a really great conversation last week. I thought talking about happiness and contentment turned into quite a few emails from people giving me their ideas of
what they thought contentment was, what they thought happiness was. And I think it points out a really, really important thing about human psyche. And we are all in this together, Jim. I think you said that. And we are trying to figure out where do we fit in and what is our time here for. So I found that great. I think there's another side to this. The other side to this is the battle between good and evil. Now, this could be a very heavy topic, but I think we need to get into that a little bit. Jack, you got something to say?
Yeah, you know, good versus evil, it's another slippery slope that we talk about here in the neighborhood. Evil, you have to decide where your personal threshold is. Some people believe that somebody's evil because they took their parking space at the mall, and some people reserve the evil label for somebody like Hitler. So we all have a different threshold of who and what is evil. Mm-hmm. And what it means to us personally. Yep. So it's a slippery slope. It's another hard question to answer.
It is. And, you know, I have to get Kathleen on the program more often because she really does pose tremendous questions that make me look inward and think. And we were talking about this good and evil, and we were talking about happiness and contentment. And she said to me, one of the things that she had heard was that part of what scares us all with good and evil is that we are all capable of both. And it scares the heck out of you when you can have thoughts that could be considered evil by some things. I don't mean evil just hurting and killing people, but sometimes doing things negative to people. You know, do we strike back? Do we get them back? Do we go after them?
Where's that threshold?
What's
Where's
threshold?
That threshold?
Man of faith, you got to have something to say about this.
I heard a story once. A Native American elder once described his own inner struggles with good and evil and his role. And he described it this way. Inside of me are two wolves. One of the wolves is mean and evil. The other wolf is good and likable. The mean wolf fights the good one all the time. When his young grandson asked him, well, which wolf wins? He thought about it and he said, whichever one I feed the most. So we all have that image of the cartoon with the red devil on one side and the angel on the other, constantly whispering in your ear, well, which one do you listen to? Mm-hmm. Which one helps you make the right choice?
And I think feeding it, I'm hearing that, and I'm saying feed it depends on what your goal is at the moment. You know, what you're going to do is the feeding of which one side or the other.
And ladies and gentlemen, this is why we keep Bill around.
Absolutely. Jim, any thoughts?
Both Jack and Bill are right. And actually, every religion has that same scenario. You know, Muslims, the jihad is what I know about the religion, is really the inner fight between that good and evil. But I say that there's 3 degrees of separation. Someone said this, I don't say it, I don't remember who, between the very bad person and the very good person. It's not 180 degrees. Mm-hmm. So I think this is a very important topic because there's a lot of people out there who probably struggle with good and evil, but I think everybody struggles with good and evil.
And I think that's the question, or what Kathleen was bringing up to me, is that I think all of us are absolutely capable of that. And what first thing that came to me was the old saying about absolute power corrupts absolutely. Mm-hmm. You could be a really good person, and now you're put in a position of power. Now, if that power is unlimited, then the tendency down the road is going to be, okay, I've done all the good things I thought I could do. Hey, I'm still in power. So now I'm going to do some more good things. But you might disagree with what I'm doing now, but no. I know better now, and we're going to do them anyway because I'm in power. Now, that power could turn to, hey, listen, Joe, we agree, we want to do that, but Jim doesn't want to do it. Well, you know what? I've had enough of Jim saying no. Let's get rid of him.
There you go.
And then next thing you know, bring in somebody that agrees with me, and then Jack doesn't agree with me. Hey, let's get rid of him. Bring in somebody that agrees with me. Now, is that evil that I'm doing that? Is that feeding the evil part of me? Now, what if I just keep giving people more food and more better homes and better times in life? Is that a good thing? Or what happens when I turn and say, you know what? Maybe we should take over the community next to us because they got some stuff and they don't really handle it properly. I know better.
Depends is on where that threshold is. Sure.
What's that
It's going to depend on that threshold. If I see you as the leader of the community, and we're going to take over the community next door, and I feel that the cause is just to take over the community next door, I'm going to see you as good. Jim might think, well, we're going to do that, and we're going to deprive those people in the next community of food or a better way of life, and he's going to see you as evil. It depends on that threshold.
Okay.
I had some thoughts about, you know, we're constantly deceiving ourselves, and we have no way of knowing if the person that we think we are is really at the very core of our being. Am I a decent person, but with the potential of someday becoming an evil monster, or am I an evil monster that thinks I'm a decent person? If somebody were to ask me that question, if I would know which one I am, I'd have to say no. I wouldn't know, because if you think about it, the lies that we tell other people are nothing compared to the lies that we tell ourselves. I'm always thinking I'm better than who I really am. I know who I am, and if I sit here and I pontificate, I can't say things in this program unless I actually believe them and do them. Walk the walk, talk the talk. I believe that 100%.
All right, so when I hear that, I'm saying, why does our society, all of society, all of humanity, for all of recorded history, we have seen periods of evil, or what we could consider evil, when one group slaughtered another and took over everything, when one leader came along and was horrific. But the thing that really has held us together all this time, and I have to question, are we evil or are we good, is that we all have agreed to some kind of a societal compact, that we're all going to agree that I'm not going to go into your house and take all your stuff and kill you just because I want it. Even if I want your stuff, I'm just not going to do it. Now, if there are people among us who decide they don't care, but how is that the majority? It's not the majority. Most of us follow those societal rules. Most of us, I think, are good, but we do have a tendency, if something we really want, can do the wrong thing. You can cheat, you can lie, you can steal, you can manipulate to get what you want. Is that evil, or is it just that blatant dark evil?
Right, and it goes back to what Bill was saying before, Joe. I believe that a lot of people are that evil person that is being held in check. Being held in check by what? Being held in check by the fact that I don't think that you're going to rob me because you think I have a gun. So that person who wants to rob me is not going to rob me because he believes I have a gun. That's an evil person being held in check.
Okay.
If that same person is doing that and saying, well, if I hold him up and I have to shoot him to get his wallet, God will be mad at me. Then he's an evil person being held in check by a religion. Mm-hmm. One, he's being held in check by a weapon. The other, he's being held in check by a religion. And if you're the good person fighting the evil, you wouldn't even consider robbing that person to take his wallet.
But how do you know you're the good person?
I honestly believe you got to examine your personal threshold. You got to examine within your religion.
Jack, here's my point, exactly what you're saying. It comes very clear. I've had friends in the cop world who have stepped out of their marriage boundaries. And you hear about it's very painful to their family. And somebody say, why would they do that? Because they had opportunity. And then they took it. So, Bill, what you're asking is, how do you know if you're the good person or the bad person? Jim, one of our favorite movies is The Postman. All right, it's a post-apocalyptic movie when the world fell apart, and now you had this evil ruler who thought he was doing the right thing, but it was really all about him. He gained a lot of power, and he says, in a previous life, I was just a copier salesman. I had this great warrior locked inside of me who had never had a chance to come out until this happened. So that's what I'm thinking when you're saying that, Bill. Who am I really? If I was put in that position of power, if I was put in that position of control, would I still be the good guy, Jack? Would I still do the nice things, or would I say, you know what, I'm going to indulge me completely?
You know, it's service to self or service to others. And sometimes servicing yourself is important. I'm not saying, because if you have to love yourself before you love others. But really, when you think about the other person and I have to use the word love because, but you really have to love everybody. You know, that's what my problem is, because when I'm driving down the road and I see that asshole cutting, excuse me,
again, I see that guy
cutting me off, you know, I am cursing that person like I just did on the mic, and I know I shouldn't, but I see an inanimate car, and I know that there's a real person behind that car, and I don't know. But once you get to have a connection with anybody, typically, I care about them.
Well, it's interesting you talk about service, Jim, because anybody that knows you knows that Jim lives to serve. That's a saying that we have around here at our house and his family's house. We all know Jim lives to serve, and he will be the first one to help anybody who needs it. So thank you, Jim, for reminding us of that, and thank you for bringing the colorful language here to Chasing Justice. Good and evil. How have you, Jack, ever been in a position where you've had to, and don't tell us the necessary story if it could result in indictment for something that happened less than 7 years ago, but is there something that you can say, hey, in my life I had to make a choice between this and this? And
have they changed the color of the paint in the detention? Oh, we're on. I'm sorry. Yeah, you know what? Those decisions come almost constantly to all of us as to how we're going to react in Jimmy's situation in driving. How are we going to react to that? Is Bill going to say, you know what, God would forgive him, I'm going to forgive him too, let's just let it go and move on? Or are you going to overreact like I would sometimes, jump out of the car and start to threaten the person? You know, again, it's a personal threshold. Does it affect us? Yeah, it affects everyone, regardless of how pious you believe yourself to be, mm-hmm. or how righteous you consider yourself to be. Yeah, it's all going to affect us. We get mad. It's a part of the human reaction.
So if we could figure out a barometer of when we might be bad, we could prevent ourselves from... And I think that's the old saying of don't put yourself in a position of temptation so that you don't have to make a bad choice. Bill, you got something to say, I can tell.
Being in the military, being in a wartime military, you have a soldier or sailor or whoever fighting a war that he's supposed to believe in. He's fighting an evil enemy, and what his belief is that once that evil enemy is vanquished, then all the people on that side are killed, peace and goodness is supposed to reign supreme. No, that doesn't happen, because there will always be good and evil, regardless of wars, regardless of small minor conflicts. Regardless, as long as there is a God who is good, and as long as there is a Satan that is evil, it's going to happen. Good means having the ability to empathize with other people, right? Evil, on the other hand, people are unable to empathize with others, and as a result, their own needs and desires are more important than the other guys. And that's going to happen.
That's a point that Jim made. So let me pose a question to you guys. And in the ethics class that I teach, I try. It's hard to come up with to draw a line that's not offensive to people, where they can actually feel that change, that threshold that you talk about, Jack. Mm. So let's picture this. You are a police officer, and you get called to the local 7-Eleven, and you go there, and there's the owner of the store standing there, and he's got a guy by the shoulder. Right, the guy had stolen something. So the first question I ask, and I ask all of you, is stealing wrong? Is stealing wrong, Jim?
Absolutely.
Is stealing wrong?
Absolutely.
Jack?
Absolutely.
Stealing is wrong. I think we would all agree. Everybody would agree, stealing is wrong. The question to ask yourself, is stealing always wrong?
There's your threshold. If the man is being detained because he was stealing a package of cigarettes or he was stealing a box of donuts, I got a problem with that. Now here's my personal threshold. If he was stealing a gallon of milk to go home to his children and so they had something to drink, maybe I'd buy him the gallon of milk.
It's still wrong, but there's my threshold.
That's exactly. There's my God, there's my empathy.
This is exactly the example that I give. And let me finish up with it. I say, now you go there and you find out that the guy says, I've been out of work for 6 months, my kids haven't eaten in for 3 days, and he stole milk and a loaf of bread. Did he still steal?
Yes.
Is stealing still wrong?
Yes.
Is it understandable?
Yes.
And would we give that person more compassion? Jack, I can't tell you how many times I have seen cops reach into their pockets on exactly that situation and pay for that food. Try and talk the guy out of signing complaints and pay for that food, and it happens.
I tried to show my children, being in different places, coming home. Best example is coming home from a camping trip, watching a guy picking up quarters in the parking lot, coming into the restaurant, and trying to pick up things that people have left behind. I grab that guy and say, listen, go up to the counter. I order him anything he wants to eat. Go wash your hands, sit down and eat. And he says, oh, thank you. Listen, thank God, don't thank me. Sit down and eat.
Right.
I try to show my children, you can afford a meal for someone, you can afford to help somebody out, do it.
And that's a decent, good thing. So the next part of my question, because that really demonstrates how that line will move, right? We all say, absolutely, stealing's improper. Bad, not right. But the line moved depending on the circumstance. So the next one I say is, you're that same police officer, and an hour later you get called to the local liquor store, and Johnny the Rum Dum is there, and he's got himself a bottle of vodka stuck in his pocket that he stole, and he says, but hey, I'm an alcoholic, and I needed this. Are you going to pay for that alcohol?
I'm not going to pay for that alcohol.
Bill?
No, I will try to get him some help.
Jim, would you pay for it?
And technically, I have. When I gave the bum in Baltimore the other week, I knew he was a drunk. I just felt the need to give him some money, and I knew he was probably going to use it for booze. Technically, I've given that guy. Because really, what's he doing? He's taking from me.
Okay, so let's look and see, does the line really mean the same thing?
And
your personal threshold is that guy has a problem and he needed something. He stole, but it's understandable. Bill, no. How come you said no?
I had a relative, and she kept on, she would ask for money. She said, I wanted to put gas in my car. I said, okay, follow me. I'll fill the car for you, which I did. She wasn't too happy about it because I know that she wanted it for
something else. Right. Jack, last word.
There's just a reason that the bum who came into the restaurant, I call him a bum for lack of a better term, I will buy him the food. I won't give him the money to buy the food because I have a funny feeling he was a drug addict.
Right. So we all have our reasons. We try and quantify. That's it's interesting, though, but it shows you how a line can move. So, gentlemen, thank you very much. This is the beginning of the conversation I think we have to have over time, and I hope people out in Chasing Justice Land, you start talking about it and thinking about it and seeing where it is. I want to tell you real quick about a couple of things. Blue Magazine, www.thebluemagazine.com. You want to go take a look. Some excellent articles come out every single time for law enforcement and for everybody. My company, TrueSecurityDesign.com. We're out there to try and keep people safe and do the right thing. Threat assessments, teaching, and training. We'll be back in a couple of minutes with Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. You know, as we move into the new year and we got the fellows from the neighborhood here, we're talking about a lot of stuff. You know, we wanted to lighten it up a little bit. We talked about good and evil. We talked about happiness and contentment, and it got a little deep. You know, we're looking and we saw, you know, New Year's Eve, there was a lot of DWI arrests made because people are out. We call it amateur night. I don't particularly go out on New Year's Eve because you know, you're driving around and there's people out there who don't really drink to excess a lot during the year. New Year's Eve, they go out and let themselves go. And there's always horrific accidents. So for my brother and sister law enforcement officers out there, I know that New Year's Eve, where I worked, was a crazy night. It usually started sometime around 11 when you'd start to have cars careening and crashing into poles, people running away, and then it just progressed into fist fights and worse things throughout the night. It got quiet around bagel time, around 4 o'clock in the morning. And then at 5 o'clock, that's when you catch the next level of drunks who were driving home, who woke up, whatever party they were at, tried to get home, and then they're weaving up and down the road at 2 miles an hour, and they're all bleared and throwed up by themselves. And that's kind of what happened. So we're having a discussion here about police powers and what the police can do. And I think a great place to look is Blue Magazine, www.thebluemagazine.com. Take a look. They have great stories and articles. I love writing for them. You can get the archives and see all the different stories that are in there. It's really a great place. But we're talking about cop stuff now, and that's Chasing Justice. That's part of what we talk about. So, James, the contrarian, how do you feel about getting stopped by law enforcement officers who say they have a suspicion?
Well, they have a reasonable suspicion.
So what's that mean, reasonable suspicion?
Well, that's the problem. If I'm swerving, they have a reasonable suspicion, but if my license plate light is out, that's not reasonable. Or my big pet peeve is if I'm driving down the road and all of a sudden they have a roadblock. I have a problem with roadblocks. Why should I be inconvenienced because I'm not doing anything wrong? That in of itself, to me, is unconstitutional.
Okay, so let's say you're wrong. It is inconvenient, but it is constitutional because this has been tested in the courts. Let me tell you the reason why they do those things. We have an overwhelming problem with drunk drivers.
What are you, Nancy Pelosi? You just made an announcement. It is constitutional.
It is. That's why everybody does it, because it's been tested in the courts. The purpose being that there's an overarching societal need to get drunken drivers off the road because they crash and kill your family who are just on their way to the store or going to the movies. And one of the things we found out is that not everybody who's intoxicated enough to kill people is going to be weaving or swerving.
So there's an overarching societal need to stop people from shooting other people. So let's take all the guns.
No, absolutely not. First of all, I'm with Jack on this one. I'm bigger than you. Don't call me names. All right, second of all, the whole thing, I don't like having to go through those roadblocks either. It's a pain in the neck. You pull over. You got to wait 5 minutes to get through. The purpose is, though, is that there's a formula that's used. They can't just make everybody go through the roadblock. The roadblock is set up from a specific time to a specific time. They put out an announcement in the newspaper where the roadblock is going to be, so you can avoid it if you want. Then they have a formula. Every red car will get pulled in, or every 10 cars that get pulled in, and then they have to wait 5 minutes. Whatever their formula is, there's a formula that they use to bring cars in. They don't just drag in every single person.
So the formula makes it constitutional.
Well, yeah, it makes it random then, as opposed to being, we're getting everybody in a big sweep. And that's what you can't do. You can't just do this big net thing. You have to have a reason. What's your formula for doing it? So the roadblocks are annoying, but I got to tell you,
the
roadblocks.
What's the probable cause?
Probable cause is drunk drivers and people getting killed.
Mm-hmm. In this instance is you need to come after me for doing something wrong. Mm-hmm. There's a suspicion, that I did something wrong. There's no suspicion there. You're just pulling me over because you think the society thinks it's necessary.
Random doesn't make it right.
Yes. Random doesn't make it right. So that's interesting. So what do we do? Just allow those drunks to ride around and kill your families? What do you think?
No, you don't have roadblocks.
How do you catch them?
You don't have roadblocks.
Well, how do you catch them? I just got done telling you that not every person drunk enough to kill you.
If you see the guy,
they don't always swerve. They don't always. There's stone alcoholics that can drive better than you at a 3-0.
There are functioning alcoholics that can work in a dangerous job.
So how do you get them off the road?
Well, if they're not swerving, and if they're not impaired where they can't drive, if you're telling me that they're functioning alcoholics that can drive a car perfectly.
No, and I didn't say perfectly. You threw that word in. What I'm saying is that they can operate the vehicle, and they don't swerve like you're picturing a drunk who swerves because you're intoxicated and you're not used to that. The stone alcoholic that's out there can drive the car. They don't have the same quick reflexes when a kid runs out in front of them. They don't have the same reflexes when you make a turn or when they go to hit a stop sign. They don't always go all the way to the stop sign. That's how they end up killing people.
Or if they're driving a bulldozer or operating heavy equipment, it's the decision, the reaction time that could possibly harm other people.
You say a bulldozer. Jack, on the racetrack, have you ever found anybody on the racetrack that comes to these races and has a little too much to drink?
It's very, very, very rare, but I had seen it years ago. Yeah.
Well, you see pilots show up at the airport and they have a little too much to drink and they go to sign into their airplane and they get arrested. Even for just the idea of getting on the airplane to fly that airplane, they get arrested and taken away. So alcohol is definitely a problem, even as much as all of us here enjoying
but
the
why did
beverage.
They get arrested?
They
because
got arrested.
Because it was a probable cause. They smell something on their breath.
Mm-hmm.
Or right. There's probably some protocol for your pilot where you have to, and remember, now you're contractual, you're driving based up for a job.
Mm-hmm.
So there's other things you have.
So there are some rules, Nancy, that you'd want to go by. You'd want to make some rules.
Wait a second. Those are private rules. The Constitution limits the scope of government.
Mm-hmm.
And when they start interfering with my life because mm-hmm. of what they think mm-hmm. is a sociological, societal need, well, too bad. Find the probable cause, and then you have a right to stop
you. Probable cause to stop you. Now, you said it's not a right. It's not a probable cause to stop you for a plate light out, a license plate light out.
Yeah. Technically, I guess they made it. This is why government's kind of broken. They made all kinds of stupid rules, like people have said, you can indict a ham sandwich.
So, is driving a privilege or is driving a right?
Driving's a right.
Driving's a right.
A right.
A right.
Yes. You have a right to drive.
The United States government, nor the states, nor the police invented the automobile. The government, the states, didn't insist on the roads. It was the private citizen. When the automobile was invented, there were no driver's licenses. There was no government or state involvement. It was people wanting transportation other than a horse. And state and federal imposed themselves on the people's right to drive a vehicle.
Thank you, Jack.
All right, but then you have...
Jimmy just agreed with me, everyone.
But then you have people who don't know how to drive, getting licenses and being able to go out there and just drive.
My point is this, and I hope maybe Jimmy will agree with me one more time. My main question, my all-encompassing question is, who says, if the people were buying vehicles on a huge basis, which they were, if the people said we should test people or instruct them on how to drive a vehicle, then it's fine, because I know who said it, the people. But when the police or the state or the federal government says you shall not drive a vehicle in this manner, you shall do this speed, and or you have to have these credentials.
Okay. So I'm going to let my 12-year-old drive a car. Just because there's no rules.
The people will mandate the rules. The problem is the state, the government, the police departments have mandated the rules. The state, here in New Jersey, it's the state of New Jersey has given you the right. No. The state of New Jersey doesn't give me the right to operate a vehicle that was made by a private citizen who owns a company who built automobiles.
Okay, gentlemen, let me step in here now and educate all of you. Let me help you a little bit. First of all, what we were talking about before, Jack, you were talking about how our local police department came into being because the citizens of this community decided we want a police department. So they constituted a police department that is paid for with taxes, it's run by the local municipality, and they follow state laws. The police, as I have said 1,000 times to anybody that will listen, the police are not a rogue group of people who just decide to get in cars with guns and go around and tell people what to do. We, the people, have decided we want laws to govern how we behave with each other. We, the people, have said we have to have some mechanism to enforce those laws. So we, the people, have constituted the police departments to go and enforce those laws that we, the people, voted for people who went to legislatures who made the laws. If we don't like the laws, we don't like the license plate law, you don't like that someone's going to pull you over because your plate is out, vote for somebody different who's going to go in and say, I'm going to do away with the license plate light law because Jim don't like it, and then he'll take it away, and then it's not a law. We, the people, make these rules.
Unfortunately, we don't.
The police also are protecting us from the bad guys. You know, they're not just out there to stop us for drunk driving, for broken taillights. They're out there to help us be safe.
Agreed. But the basic point is what we're getting to here is who says on various laws that many of us don't agree with. The most recent one in my memory is the seatbelt law. Now, you have to wear a seatbelt. Otherwise, that gives the police a reason to pull you over and ticket you, stating the reasons that too many people are being injured by uninsured motorists. Well, guess what? We have computers. We have ability to find out who these people are that don't have insurance. Go after them.
Well, so don't forget, it's not the police that made that law.
Right, here's your remedy. Run for office and say, I'm going to do away with the seatbelt law. Everybody's going to vote for you. You're going to go to the legislature. You're going to write a law that says the seatbelt law is gone, along with the license plate law, and it'll get wiped off the books and it doesn't exist anymore. That's how that's done.
Now,
let me just tell you
something. The seatbelt law, I'm in favor of. I've seen it save lives. The helmet law for, not motorcycles, for bicycles for kids under 14, I agree with it. I don't like the fact that it has to be legislated to force it.
Yes.
My kids will always wear the helmet. My grandkids will wear the helmet. I don't like the fact that it's legislated, though.
True. You know, I think we all are touching the same subject in a different manner. And I've said this a few times. My real problem is not with the license plate law, not the cops stopping me for the lack of a license plate light. It's the government in putting these laws into place. We live in a society that has more laws, laws on top of laws, laws that contradict each other. And so really the cops are the front line of that. And so my objection is not with the cop so much, is with the legislature and the people who are making these laws. And I agree with what you said, Joe. Yeah, the people have created the legislature and elected the legislature in order to do what they're supposed to do, but I don't agree with what they're doing. So, and I think that's where the bottom line is.
So are you going to take it out on the cop that stopped you for that broken light?
No, not typically.
So you're going to stop...
Unless it gives me an attitude, then I stop.
But you're going to stop, mm-hmm. and you're going to comply with listening to the officer say, I want to see your license and registration and all of that. Mm-hmm. So what's the beef? You can't pick and choose.
The beef is when I'm being stopped because of a minor thing like that. I say to myself, there are people selling drugs, there's murders, there's all kinds of politicians getting away with everything, and you're worrying about my license plate light? Give me a break. Is this why I hired you as a taxpayer to worry about my license plate light? No, I'm worried about the opioid abuse. I'm worried about the heroin abuse. Where are you now? Why are all the cops in these little towns in New Jersey when they should be in Trenton, Asbury Park, and in Newark, fixing the real crime, not little Jim Giordano.
Well, here's an interesting concept. A couple of years ago in the newspaper, there was a town, a small municipality in New Jersey, and I know we have listeners across the country, but New Jersey's a microcosm of the rest of the world. And in this little town, the mayor and council had a lot of power over the police department. Sometimes they do. And they went to the chief and they said, listen, we don't like people who live in town getting tickets. We don't think it's right. It don't make them happy. They look at us and it looks bad. So we don't want in-town people getting tickets for all kinds of nonsense. Go after the people that live out of town. So the police chief took that direction, went to his cops and said, listen, local people in town, unless they're drunk driving or doing something really dangerous, leave them alone. Concentrate on the out-of-town people. And this is what they did for a couple of years. Well, this came out. Somehow or other it came out. Somebody went and said something. Hey, they had a beef with the chief and they said, this is what we were told. And it blew up into a whole thing where the chief had to leave his job. There was big lawsuits in the community. What I'm trying to say is the point, though, that could have been done in a different way. We could certainly say in our community, we would like, and this is when everybody shows up at town hall and says, Mr. Mayor, police chief, we have a big problem with opioids here. People are dying. We want you to take that traffic unit that you have that's giving everybody these nonsense tickets that we don't like, put them all in a narcotics unit and go after drugs. That's what we want. And the pressure of the people can inform the governors, the people who are in charge, to say, Chief, what do you need to do to move those people to narcotics? Let's do that. We have that kind of home rule.
How much revenue does that bring into the town? Here's the problem. Brings nothing into the town. What brings revenue into the town is that ticket.
Yes, it does.
And this is where the problem lies.
This, now you're touching on something that I know lots of cops talk about. You know, back in the day there was a quota, or at least we thought there was a quota. You don't have quotas. But if you don't, the reason that cops write tickets is not that they say you got to write 300 a year or you're going to lose your day off or whatever. They can't do that. That's illegal. But part of being a police officer is to stop suspicious people. That's why we pay them. To enforce motor vehicle laws, enforce criminal laws, enforce ordinances that we have in town to make life better. And we're trying to figure out if this employee that we have that we're paying $50,000, $60,000, $80,000, $100,000, how do you tell if that officer's doing his job? So you look at his statistics and you go, okay, how many car stops did you make? Well, Jack made 350 car stops this year and he wrote 200 tickets. Okay, Jim stopped 9 cars and wrote 6 tickets. They're both getting the same amount of money. Are we still having car accidents? Are we still having people stealing?
Terrible.
Well, it's the only way to tell if you're doing your job. You're supposed to do some motor vehicle. You're supposed to do criminal. You're supposed to do all of that when you're out there. So how do we tell? Now, maybe Jack's doing too much, and he's not paying attention to the criminal things. And there's burglaries in his part of town when he's working, where Jim has no burglaries. So that's where the quota thing came from, because it is about money. And I know lots of cops hate it, because you don't want to be writing tickets to people, because it costs people a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Ladies and gentlemen, I guess you can see that this really, this can get us going. But law enforcement is part of our life, and this is Chasing Justice. So we're going to be talking about this as we move forward in 2019. I want to thank the guys in the neighborhood here. This has been great to hear from everybody again. I really missed you guys. And 2019 should be busy for all of us, so we'll see you all soon here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network. You want to say goodbye? Say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
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 Goodbye.